Welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show, the voice of the underdog. You know what we do here every week, exploring how underdogs keep our swagger in today's society and culture. And we do it from all the angles, you know, the unavoidable, the underreported, the unbelievable, the unjust, the unsaid, you know, underdog stuff. And just in case this is your first time, let me give you a quick disclaimer. This ain't CNN. Nope. This ain't the Washington Post. Nope. This ain't Hot 97. Nope. They cover the news and culture, but here at the Gregory Neesmith Show, we get personal about it. And to take you on that journey every week, you have your host, Gregory Neesmith, underdog advocate, certified coach, published author, and founder of Underdog Stuff. And always just trying to figure out how we as underdogs get access to the people and the resources we need on our come ups and comebacks. And today's show, we're gonna break it down in a couple ways. You know, we'll kick off the show with the unavoidable news. Then midway through, we'll talk about the un of the week. And then we'll close, as always, with the underdog spotlight. And we have a special guest who will join us for that. That's Asha Davis. She's a comedian, writer, and a Madison Avenue advertising exec. And grateful to have her on. She's going to stop by and give us her unique perspective on what's going on in the world. And also, she's going to let us know about the grind and the hustle of being a rising star in comedy. And also, she might share her top five comedians of all time. Why? Because today's episode is called Your Top Five. And we're going to get into the top five people most likely to be president in 2020. We're going to get into your top five comedians of all time, since we have an underdog comedian coming on the show later. And I also might share my top five things to unlearn during the holiday season, because the holiday season's here. Episode 92. Let's get into it. Yo, top five. At some point, I do want to hear from you, your top five comedians of all time. I'm going to share my top five things to unlearn during the holidays, during the under the week. But first, let's get into the unavoidable news. You know, it seems like it's still fall. I mean, it is still fall, right? I don't think winter officially starts till the end of December. But yet there's things that we are, each of us, I know I am, thinking about that are happening next year or even further out than next year. If you're a parent, or if you happen to be in school, or if you work at a school, you're already thinking about your spring break plans. You're already thinking about what you're going to do during your time off next summer, all the way into 2019. If you are an underdog who's in high school right now, and you're trying to get ready for college, you're in 12th grade right now, you're filling out applications right now. Again, it's 2018, but you're already doing things that are going to happen, seems far off, but you're already getting ready for a September freshman semester, 2019, already right now. So what I'm about to talk about may seem far off, but it's not. There's a lot of things that seem far off that we're already thinking about, doing things towards already. Lots on our mind that seems far away, but it's really not. And you know what's not far away? 2020, November 2020, when we will elect either a new president or we might re-elect the current one. And for those of you like Gregory, it's still fall. Why are we about to talk about who's going to be president? Who's the top five people most likely to be president in 2020? Well, the reason why we're talking about it is because, just like folks, you out here planning your spring breaks, you out here planning a lot of stuff you're going to do for summer vacation next year. A lot of y'all who are into God, religion, you're already making your Easter plans right now. You're like, what weekend is Good Friday falling on? When's Easter coming? You're already thinking about it. So we're going to start thinking about the election on today's show, because we're only a few months away from the first wave of folks announcing that they might be running for president, especially in the Democratic Party, to go up against Donald Trump. And I know you're sitting there thinking, man, that ain't a couple months away. First primary probably ain't till 2020 or the end of 19. Well, guess what? Do you remember when Hillary Clinton announced that she was running for president? Guess what? it was April 12th, 2015. That would be the same as someone announcing April 15th, 2019, which is only a couple months away. Remember that dude, Donald Trump? How can you forget him? He's the current president of the United States right now. He announced in June. Again, a lot of y'all making your summer vacation plans already. There's a couple people making their I'm going to announce to be president plans already right now. So the question for the unavoidable news is, who's your top five power ranking? Who's the five most likely people to be president of the United States in 2020? Number five most likely, four, three, and who's your number one? Let a brother know. I got my top five power ranking. I'll share that before we get out of here. Shout out to Nicole Renee, who checks in online, and she wrote, she thinks her number one pick most likely to be president of the United States in 2020 is this dude right here.
We are absolutely, thoroughly convinced and optimistic about the prospects of this country. I mean, we are so better positioned than any nation in the world. If we just get out of our own way a little bit here. No, I really mean it. There is nothing we can't do.
That's Nicole Renee. She thinks Joe, aka Uncle Joe Biden, former vice president of the United States during the Obama years, she thinks he's likely to be number one. Or this dude here who, I don't know, a couple months ago, I didn't even know who this guy was. And now all of a sudden, he seems to be a lot of folks' favorite.
Peaceful, nonviolent protests, including taking a knee at a football game to point out that black men, unarmed, black teenagers, unarmed, and black children, unarmed, are being killed at a frightening level right now, including by members of law enforcement, without accountability and without justice. And this problem, as grave as it is not going to fix itself. And they're frustrated, frankly, with people like me and those in positions of public trust and power who have been unable to resolve this or bring justice for what has been done and to stop it from continuing to happen in this country. And so nonviolently, peacefully, while the eyes of this country are watching these games, they take a knee to bring our attention and our focus to this problem to ensure that we fix it. That is why they are doing it. And I can think of nothing more American than to peacefully stand up or take a knee for your rights anytime, anywhere, any place.
Okay, talk that talk. That was Beto O'Rourke, politician from Texas, who almost doesn't get you a win, but almost beat Ted Cruz in Texas to become a senator down there. And a lot of folks, even though he lost, still think he's a winner. And there's some folks thinking that Beto might be the person most likely to be president in 2020. That's at least according to Nicole Renee. Let me know your thoughts. With that, how do we even know who's running? How can I even do a top five already? You're thinking we're so far out. How do I even know who might be running? Well, 538, a website that I definitely recommend for folks who want to keep up with what's going on in politics and get somewhat of a objective point of view on things. It's not really lean to the left, lean to the right. They try to base a lot of their stuff on stats and data and stuff like that. But they did a little test to see what are the signs that someone's running for president. And they looked at what are the things that people have done in the past that normally end up being indicators that they were going to declare to run for office. And they looked at a couple things, several of them. They included things like, did they make at least one visit to Iowa, South Carolina, and New Hampshire for a political event sometime like around now? Yeah, way out, like 2 years in advance. Did they stop in one of those early primary states? Also, another way to know if someone's thinking about running, have they been featured in a national magazine like Time Magazine or something like that, a big feature, and you know, getting their name out, their publicity for them. Another one, did they go campaign for somebody? You know, I saw Kamala Harris down there in Florida helping campaign for Andrew Gillum. And you saw a lot of folks, Cory Booker, out there campaigning for folks, I think, in Alabama. So, you know, you see a lot of these folks doing things that people who've done them in the past means that maybe they're going to run in the future. Also, another thing that people do that might be running for president around this time is they release a book. And no, y'all, Michelle Obama is not running. I know her book came out. I know it sold a lot of copies. I know she just released a book. I don't think she's running. That might be good for us, but I don't think she's going to do it. So with that, they 538 looked at a bunch of politicians to see who's done some of these things. And someone like Joe Biden, who Nicole Renee mentioned as her number one or two pick, has done a bunch of those things already. And I don't think it's any secret that someone like Joe might be running. With that, when I'm trying to figure out what's possible, where do I go? Do I go to the news? Do I read online? Do I ask my friends? What do I do when I want to see what the odds are of something happening? You know, I do like a lot of Americans. I go to Vegas. I go to the betting sites. I mean, not really, but in this case, I did. I just wanted to go see where the money is, where the bets are, you know, because folks out in Vegas and some of these online betting places, that's what they do for a living. Stats and favorites and underdogs and so forth. And it turns out that as of right now, the two favorites, according to Vegas and sportsbook Bet Online, the two most likely Democrat front runners at this point, according to some of the betting folks, are Kamala Harris, a senator in California, and Beto O'Rourke, the dude who almost beat Ted Cruz. And y'all not going to like this. Well, those who lean to the left. And the lead front runner, most likely, according to the odds, to be the president of the United States in 2020, Donald Trump. Yeah, for all y'all folks who think that he's not doing well, he doesn't have a good approval rating, he's out of here. Right now, the smart money is on Donald as the favorite to be the next president of the United States, or in his case, a second term in 2020. We'll see if all that changes as we get a little closer to that time. With that, I will share my top five, and hopefully you'll share your top five too. If you listen to the podcast, tweet at me, Facebook me, IG me. Let me know who your top five are. But my top five power ranking, most likely to be president of the United States in 2020, are these five people. Number five, most likely, Joe Biden. Now, I will say, for all those Uncle Joe supporters out there, he's got a couple things working against him. One, he might be seen as the establishment or old school because he's part of the old Obama administration. Secondly, you know, this is the year of the woman, and I believe that in politics that will carry on into 19 and into 20. And some folks feel like he kind of fumbled the whole Anita Hill thing years ago when he was part of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So we'll see. That might be held against him. And then last but not least, and you know, we talk about the unsaid here on the Gregory Nisman Show. He's a white male. He's a white man. And, you know, my take on all this, I believe if someone's qualified to run, they should run, regardless of race, gender, sexual orientation. But I will say, if you put into the context of the Democratic Party, at least seemingly commitment to a diverse mix of candidates, it's been almost 16 years since the Democratic Party nominated a white man to be a runner for president of the United States. You got to go back to John Kerry in 2004. Ever since then, 2008, 12, and 16, you had Hillary Clinton and, of course, Barack Obama. So we'll see. But I got Joe at number five. You never know. He might, this will sound crazy, he might beat the odds and become the Democratic Party nominee and then eventually president of the United States. Number four, I got Elizabeth Warren. I mean, just because, you know, I think she's in the running. And, of course, at my number three, I have this woman right here.
And we have to remember, it's not about fighting against something, it's about fighting for something. And it is fighting with a spirit of love of country. And that's really important to remember.
Yeah.
We love our country. And part of being a patriot, love of country, is about fighting for the ideals of our country, fighting for the best of who we are. We are a great people. We are a great country. And it is part of loving our country to say, you know what? I believe those words we spoke in 1776, that we are all equal and should be treated that way.
And that's Kamala Harris, Senator from California. I got her at number three right now in my power rankings. We'll see if she moves up. We'll see if she makes it. and ends up being the 46th president of the United States. And number two, I know a lot of y'all aren't going to like it, but yeah, Donald Trump. I got him at number two most likely to be president of the United States in 2020. Smart money's on him right now. He is actually the betting favorite. And, you know, America kind of likes the incumbent. George Bush wasn't that popular after his first term. Got a second one. A lot of people were pushing back against Barack Obama after his first term. Got a second one. Bill Clinton was in a lot of trouble. Monica Lewinsky, his wife called people super predators. People thought maybe he worked too much with the Republicans. Guess what? Got a second term. So America, we kind of like the dude who's in office to get a second term. So we'll see. And last but not least, I'm going to use a sports term here. My number one most likely person to be president in 2020 is actually something I call the field. And that is what I mean by that is someone not Donald Trump, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, or Kamala Harris. I think it could be somebody that isn't a front runner right now. And I say that because for context, in 2006, before you got to 2008, you ain't know Barack Obama was even somebody who could be president. And you sure enough didn't think he could win in 2006. And I know most of y'all in 2014 were not thinking Donald Trump was going to be the 45th president of the United States. So my number one pick right now, as we sit here, to be president of the United States is the field. Someone that's not a front runner right now could come out of nowhere and win it all. With that, though, I do think that oftentimes we like to get someone in office who's really, really different from the person we had before. Obama's really, really different than George Bush. Trump is really, really different than Obama. And I think the next president will be someone who's really, really different than Trump. And that'll be along the lines of probably race, gender, temperament. And so we'll see. It's the holiday season. And I wanted to talk briefly about the idea of there's some things that happen during the holidays that I think it would be good if we could unlearn them. And I'm just going to get right into it because I want to get through this under the week. The under the week is this week, the UN stands for unlearn. Top five things to unlearn during the holidays. Number five, stop listening to directions from people who aren't headed in the direction you headed in. You're going to run into a lot of family and friends during the holidays. I'm going to use a basic example. Let's say you're trying to go to Atlanta. Don't listen to your uncle giving you directions about what to do in Atlanta. And he ain't never been there. Don't do it. Stop listening for directions from people who ain't been there. And that friend of yours, they may mean well, and they trying to give you advice on your side hustle. And guess what? They don't have a side hustle. Stop listening from directions from people who ain't headed where you headed, especially during the holidays, because you're going to run into a lot of people. Ain't that the truth? Number four, stop spending money you don't have. A lot of, I saw a report that folks said that the average consumer is going to spend about $1,000 on holiday gifts this year. That's too much money. Want to know how I know? Because there was another study that said about half of us, one in two people in America can't come up with $2,000 in 30 days in cash. But yet we all about to spend $1,000 on gifts. It's not good. Don't do it. Be thoughtful. You know, there's a lot of ways to show your love without having to spend a lot of money. Number three, stop dating people that you don't really like, especially during the holidays. It can cost you money. I mean, we already talked about stop spending money. If you're dating somebody, you don't really like them, but you got to give them a gift. And I mean, so it's going to hurt you in your pocket and in your love life. Stop dating people you don't really like. I know it's tough to be alone during the holidays, but it's even worse to be with somebody you don't really like during the holidays. That's number three. I'm just saying some things during the under the week. This week, the unstands for unlearn. Five things I want us to unlearn during the holidays. Number two, stop making resolutions, especially when you didn't even finish the ones that you made last time. Just, you know, we're underdogs. Not everything fits neatly into a calendar year, 12 months, January 1st. I start the new stuff because I finished everything from last year. That's not the case. So stop making new resolutions until you finish the ones that you already signed up for. And the number one thing to unlearn during the holidays, and this one's on a very, very serious note, stop thinking that something is wrong with you for being potentially depressed or feeling alone during the holidays. The holidays are a heightened time, I think, when We look at ourselves and we look at what's going on around us, and it's actually common to potentially not be feeling quite right during the holidays, or depressed and alone. And just know that you don't have to go through it alone. There's people you can reach out to. If it's getting very extreme, whether it's the suicide hotline, there's therapists you can call on demand, things like that. But my wish is that all of us, all the underdogs, want you to make it through the holidays and not go through it alone. And it's okay if you're not feeling well. But what's not okay is for you not to reach out for support. And those are my top five things to unlearn during the holidays. Stop listening for directions from people who ain't headed in your direction. Stop spending money you don't have. Stop dating people you don't really like. It's going to cost you money too, man. Be hard on your heart. And then also, don't spend money you don't have, and stop making resolutions until you stop making resolutions, especially if you haven't finished your other ones. And please just stop thinking there's something wrong with you if you're not feeling well during the holidays. Just reach out for some support. With that, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to get into the underdog spotlight. We have a special guest in the building. Her name is Asha Davis. We're going to give her a big introduction when we come back. And guess what? It's the holiday season, ain't it? And so with that, we're going to play a little holiday music when we go to break. And then when we come back, the underdog spotlight with Asha Davis, comedian, writer, and ad exec, and more after this break.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen, but do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Come on! Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw him, you would even say it close. Come on, come on! All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, come on! Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you ride my sleigh tonight? Then all the reindeers loved him, and they shouted out with glee. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you go down to history forever. You go down to history forever. You go down to history. What?
That is going to be fun. I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
Did I get the names right for the
Raiders?
Welcome back to the Gregory Neeson Show. The voice of the underdog. The voice of DMX. You know, the woman in there sounded just a little bit like you.
That's what I was like. When did I record that?
I'm like, you know DMX? All right, I'm all over the place now. Welcome back to the Gregory Neeson Show, episode 92, your top five. And we're going to talk about your top five comedians. We already talked about your top five people most likely to be present. Why? Because we're talking top five, but we're talking comedians, especially because our underdog spotlight this week is Asha Davis, comedian, writer, Madison Avenue ad exec, plus a proud Torontonian, now calling Harlem home. And she's going to share with us about the come up as a rising star comedian and what you should know about the hustle, like the real deal. And hopefully before we get out of here, she'll at least share who her top five comedians are of all time, too. Ooh. Asha Davis in the building.
Hey, it's nice to be back.
Hey, it's nice to have you back. For those who may not know, who may go, oh, she sounds familiar because you thought that was her with DMX in the break there. That wasn't her, but it sounded like her. But where you might have heard her before is that she was part of the original start of this whole thing here. And we're happy to have you back.
Thanks. Nice to be back.
Yes. And with that, the phone lines are popping too. I think we have two callers right now. So I don't even know how to handle this abundance of you in the studio, callers on the line. I'm going to attempt to see if I can get a caller on the line first, and then we're going to go to Asha. Name it where you're calling from. Caller. Name it where you're calling from. Caller, are you on the line? All right. We'll try that again later. Asha Davis, welcome back.
Hey.
First, you are really becoming a big-time comedian. I've been watching your Instagram and Facebook, and I saw your name was on the flyer.
It was on a flyer. Yeah, my first time being on a flyer.
Okay, where were you last night?
Last night I did a show. It was on 44th Street. It was at a spot called the Producers Club. Shout out to the venue. Shout out to Mike Wachowski. This was a dope show. You know, it was a really fun show. And it was also my first time doing 10 minutes. on stage. So usually as a comic, you do sort of your type five. So this was also my time doing 10 minutes on stage. And so it was dope too.
Ooh, I can't.
Like a milestone, you know?
That's a big deal. And we're going to get into like what it's really like to be a comic, because I think I'm funny at the, you know, Thanksgiving table. And then it's different than if I got to stand up in front of people for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Whole different ball game. With that though, I have a fond appreciation for comics.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they are underdogs themselves and they tell the story of underdogs.
Yeah.
With that, I like to ask everybody who comes on the show before we get into everything else. When I say the word underdog, what comes to mind for you?
You know, underdog is somebody that nobody expects to win. You know, somebody who is coming in and their opponents or their adversaries seem likely to beat them. You know, I think definitely, you know, in the context of comedy, a lot of the people that do this are, you know, white males from the suburbs, you know? So already me coming in as a Black female is kind of like, well, nobody expects her to be that good. So it's kind of cool because in this stage, I feel like being an underdog in that respect works in my benefit, because it's like nobody expects me to be funny when I go on stage. So I'm always over delivering in that regard, you know?
Man, no, you bring up, it's a big deal when we talk about race and gender. As I was trying to think about my top five lists of all time, I was a bit, you know, there was a certain emotion about the fact that there weren't a lot of women even in the mix.
Yeah.
When I Google like a lot of top 10s and top 20s. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're out there making it happen.
I'm trying.
So with that, you talked about 10 minute sets and things like that. What's it really like, the hustle of becoming a comic?
It's so funny because, I mean, you as a, you know, general human being who loves comedy, you know, you see a Netflix special or you might go to a comedy club and you really don't really know what it took for that set to come to be. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, the comedy is very strategic. There's very set steps that you go through as a comic to sort of quote unquote make it, you know? And so it starts with deciding that you want to do stand up, you know? And so you take your time and you sort of craft your first set. And it's always a type five when you can go to open mics and, you know, you'll always get a 5 minute block, you know? And so you do that, you sort of do that type five and you go around and you do as many open mics and as many things as you can do with that 5 minutes until it's as tight as possible and as funny as possible. Then from there, you start getting to do, you know, shows, like real shows with your type five. And then from there, you start getting to do, you know, bigger and bigger shows. Now, all of a sudden, you might have 7 minutes. Now you might have 8 minutes. You might have 10 minutes. You know?
Oh, you mean like you had?
And then it's like, then, you know, so once you get your 10 minutes, then, you know, you try to perfect that. And then, you know, the next step is 15. The next step is hosting a show. So, you know, one of the things you see is the ability to have that crowd interaction. You notice hosting, you know, it's a skill, you know, to be able to pick up somebody from a crowd and just come up with a quick joke like that, you know? And so being a host is a key thing. And then also, then basically you start to, once you hone these skills, then you put a tape together, and that's when you start getting to audition for places like Caroline's and Comedy Cellar and, you know, the bigger sort of clubs, you know, and you kind of have to earn your stripes before you get to do those types of venues. And then, you know, hopefully you get a Netflix special.
Okay. I mean, I want to make sure. That's why I'm glad I have you on now, because I know it might be hard to get you once you get that Netflix thing going. So I can at least, when you do get the Netflix, I'm going to just play this as if you were like, we're a guest on the show. I'm like, we have Asha today, who you see on Netflix. And then we'll just play this over. I edit out the Netflix
Then you
part.
Get a Netflix special and you cut to the special. Yeah, that'd be hot.
Now, you talk about that first five.
Yeah.
Does it go smoothly? Like, you know, they laugh all the time and it just, you just been like easy going,
no.
Just rising to your 10 minutes.
You know, I mean, I think it's definitely a process. You know, I've definitely had some shows where people laugh less, you know. I've definitely had some shows where it's like, whoa, people are like coming up to me after the show like I'm a celebrity, you know, like, wow.
Oh, you are.
You know, but I mean, Gregor, you're my friend. You've been to, you know, a number of my shows, and you have commented on the difference between, you were at my first show, yeah. You know, so the difference between the first time I ever did stand up versus the last show you were at, it's a
totally different,
you know, and it's totally, if this is something where you can't practice by yourself, it's one of those skills where you gotta be out there and doing it for people. So I think that's what is also part of the art and the thrill of it, is that you can't just do it in your room in front of a mirror a thousand times.
I know, but that sounds, now that you, when you put it like that, you mean I gotta practice in front of strangers who might boo me to get better?
Exactly. There's always a chance of getting booed. I've never been booed though. I've been doing it for a year and change.
Well, see, that's
but cool. I have seen somebody get a shoe thrown at them on stage.
Well, that's also because you're talented and good at what you do. But I want to highlight something you said. There's strategy and there's work to this.
Yes.
It's a profession.
It's a plan.
You don't just make, I want to just, I mean, I know this, but I want to just make sure for those who might be sitting out there thinking they were funny this weekend with their family and that they could like do a set this tomorrow and just walk onto the stage. Just help me understand, for those 5 minutes, for example, did you just walk on stage and start talking for 5 minutes, or how much time even went into that 5 minutes?
I mean, the first crafted set that I had, I literally wrote it. I was on a plane in LA, and then I wrote it, and just I had 2 weeks off of work, you know, and I really spent that whole time crafting this, performing it for my family, for strangers, you know. And then when I felt like, okay, this is good enough for me to go on stage, then, you know, I did it at a show, and I thought that was decent. And that was a year ago. And even now I look back at the video from that first set, I'm like, that was terrible. You know what I mean? And it's like, to get to where I'm at now, where it's like, wow, that was really good. It took a lot of times performing, changing the order, doing it, taking feedback constructively, fixing it. You know what I mean? And also just being more organic and natural on stage. Part of comedy is sounding like you're having a conversation, not like you're performing memorized material, you know? And so you only get that level of comfort when you just do it.
No, I think that's so true. And, you know, I'm sure we can both relate, because we used to do this radio show together. And sometimes I would tell friends like, hey, I got to get ready for my show, and it'd be like Saturday night. And they're like, what do you mean? Because they just thought that we would just walk in here and start talking. And I used to think, that presentation that you're about to do tomorrow, you've been working on that 15 minute presentation for a month. And you think we just walk in here and start talking? So I think it's a great example of most things that work out take a lot of prep. And then the greats make it seem like it's just off the cuff. Mm-hmm. With that though, you could be doing anything, right? I always think the talented folks always get so much talent. So you're a writer, you're a comedian, you're an advertising executive, you're a strategist, you're an entrepreneur. Like, you could do a bunch of things in the world. Why comedy?
You know, I think it's really important in life. I think especially if you're like me, if you're an overachiever, to have something that you're passionate about. It's easy to drown in work and all of these other responsibilities. You have to have something that is truly yours and your passion that you are doing, you know, in order to feel fulfilled in life, you know? And so, you know, comedy is mine. You know, comedy is like my outlet that allows me to not take 1,000 Xanax pills a day. You know what I mean? Like that feeling of exhilaration when you are on stage, and that validation of getting a round of applause or people being like, hey, can you be on my show? Like, I saw you on this show and you're pretty dope. You know, it's like, that is like, that feeling is like no drug, no, nothing could give you that feeling. And I think that's why I do it, you know?
Man, it's a natural high. And you get to also make a difference in people's lives in a way when you're on stage too, right? You get to give them an outlet to sometimes just...
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool when people of color, especially women of color, come up to me afterwards, because it's like, you know, they'll be like, representation matters, right? Yeah. And it's like, I'm, I, you know, having people come up to me on stage or afterwards and being like, I really liked your set, or you were really speaking to me, you know, I it's cool. Because I mean, I'm not the typical quote unquote black comic in the sense that I'm Canadian black, which is just a different type of black person.
That's a different black.
You know, exactly. You know what I mean?
I don't know many Canadians.
And like, you know, I'm not going to, like, I did grow up in the suburbs for the majority of my life. You know what I'm saying? And so like, you know, it's like, I'm not pretending that I'm something that I'm not, you know? And I think that a lot of people can appreciate that. And it's like, you know, I can rep for the female nerds out there too. So it's cool to just be like a voice that's not always there.
Shout out to the nerds out there. We appreciate you too. The underdog nerds, words, as they are affectionately called sometimes. With that, there's a lot of folks who listen to the show who are on the come up, on the comebacks, and they might be an aspiring comic. They might be at that first step you talk about, which is like, they're literally trying to figure out, do they want to choose comedy?
Yeah.
What's at least one must thing they must know about being successful on this grind of being a comic?
You have to write out your set. So that's...
You can't just wing it?
No.
What?
You can't... No.
I'm just going to get up there and talk.
When you think... That's the difference. The people that just think they're funny around their friends and they just go up on stage and you know there's no craft to it. They didn't write it down. There's no whatever. That you could tell. You could definitely tell. Like, even if you go to comics like Jerry Seinfeld or, you know, big comics, Steve Martin, like, you know, you look at these guys, they write out the whole set. They analyze, you know, videotape your sets, watch the tape afterwards and see and, you know, analyze it. Treat it like a job. Treat it like it's something you genuinely want to get better at. You want to get promoted at, because that's how you actually get better. And definitely don't think that just because you got laughs on your first two times out,
they don't always come.
That you're the next Dave Chappelle. Trust me.
Hey, as you say in sports, you're only as good as your last game. You got to keep bringing it. And guess what? Underdogs out there, to her point, guess who also has notes every time they come into the studio to do this radio show? Mm. We don't just walk in here and do this. I love that. You got to put in the work.
Yes.
With that, though, before we get out of here, I do want to get your thoughts on your top five comedians of all time. Today's episode is called Your Top Five.
Yeah.
And someone who's in this mix.
Yeah.
And is going to be one of the greats one day.
Yeah.
And, you know, before you get that next week special, we had you on here. Who's your top five? Not including yourself.
Well, definitely Dave Chappelle, Richard Pryor, Chris Rock is in the top five in that order, okay. You know. But then, you know, my last two are less predictable. Ellen DeGeneres, actually. Okay. So these are comics that I study and like watch countless, like all their specials, watch their YouTube videos, whatever. Ellen DeGeneres stand up, for anybody that has not seen it, she is a genius. And then, you know, my last pick is obviously Eddie Murphy. You know what I mean? Somebody could come out with a stand up set years ago and somebody could come up with a stand-up set years ago and basically it still holds up 30 years later. Like, that's genius, you know?
I love it. So now you make me feel better about my top five, because some people question it, but I like the way you put it.
Yeah.
That some of my people, my top five, are because they're special to me.
Yeah.
And my top five are actually Cat Williams, who's special to me, mm-hmm. and someone I've appreciated coming up. Eddie Murphy, Bernie Mac, Dave Chappelle, and Chris Rock.
Nice.
Those are my top five. With that, though, if folks want more Asha Davis, and they should,
yeah,
how can they get in touch with you? How can they follow you before you get that Netflix special? They want to get on board now.
Follow me on Instagram at Asha Destiny.
I love it. I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been great.
And thanks for letting these underdogs out here know that they get to choose this life, and then they get to put in the work, and then eventually they're going to have the 10-minute shows, the hosting shows, and then That Netflix special. Come on, get on out of here. Episode 92 was a good one. We had talked about who were your top five people most likely to be president. We got a quick call from Kaja who says, yo, Gregory, why you leave out Deval Patrick, former governor, I believe, of Massachusetts? My bad. He's not left out now. He's in it now. He's in. We talking about him. And so I appreciate the call, and please call back next week. Also, we talked about the top five things not to do during the holidays to unlearn. One of them is stop dating people you don't like. Stop spending money you don't have. And you can listen back to the podcast and hear the rest of those top five. And our underdog spotlight of the week, Asha Davis.
Hi.
The talented Asha Davis, writer, comedian, ad exec, overall entertainer. And we were grateful that you came through and blessed us today with your presence.
Thanks for having me.
And with that, we're going to close the show with some other thank yous to all the callers, the online comments. Shout out to Daryl. Appreciate you, man. The 215 showing up in the 212. And shout out to all the underdogs commenting, listening, and calling in. And live show producer Megan, podcast editor Kayla. Appreciate you. You can search The Gregory Neesmith Show on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play. And you can subscribe to my email newsletter at gregoryneesmith.com. And as always, I'm going to leave you with my favorite quote, underdogs. Can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace.